Hello and welcome to Composer Chat, a podcast where we talk a little about music, a little about life, and a whole lot about whatever nonsense happens to come up otherwise. I'm your host, Jason Nitsch, and each week I am joined by one of my favorite composers out there in the world. It's my show, so that's why it's my favorite composers who get the invites, and you're just going to have to live with that. Stick around, we're going to do a deep dive with some of the most creative people in the world. You're listening to Composer Chat. All right, hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Composer Chat. I'm your host, Jason Nitsch. Yes, I'm a composer, and yes, I'm here every week. But each week, I am joined by a guest composer of my own selection, and we will spend the next hour talking about them with frequent interruption by me. So if you have stuck with me the whole season, welcome to episode 25, season one's season finale. I'm very excited about my guest today, someone whose music I have loved for a really long time. And so I'm looking forward to our conversation. Please welcome to the show, Marie Douglas.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me on here. And it's such a cool thing. I feel like, you know, this archive of my voice and everybody's going to be able to access it and see what I sound like. So, you know, as opposed to, I don't know what, you know, a lot of these composers' voices sound like over the history of life. Anyway, I'm Marie. I'm a composer. I was raised in Atlanta, Georgia. A lot of my influence and my compositions come from there. I love to infuse things like, you know, HBCU marching bands. That's another part of my culture that was really ingrained in me growing up, and I was lucky to perform with some groups that imitated that, and also just at Florida A&M with the March 100. I love sports. You know, I was an athlete first before I was ever, you know, able to really express what I felt about music. I was playing basketball and running track for years, and that's where I get a lot of my drive and motivation from, is all that exercising. Right now I'm finishing up my doctorate at the University of Memphis, which I loved. My time there studying with Cameron Entz and a couple of great folks, Albert Nguyen, really, really just awesome, different minds to pick. I'm out in LA right now. My husband, he's one of the directors at University of Southern California for the Trojan March Band, and, you know, just enjoying being over here in the perfect weather all the time. Although it does get like freakishly cold and suddenly cold, like sometimes, like 49 does not feel the same over here as it does on the east side and the south and stuff like that. But yeah, just enjoying life and, you know, trying to grow as a composer and a conductor.
That's really great. That's really fantastic. You know what? You brought up a couple of things, and so we'll talk about them, because we often, before I start asking questions, I often talk about frivolous things.
Cool.
You know what? I made the observation. I lived in Colorado for a while, and I thought that the temperatures hit differently in that climate than it did. I grew up in Houston, you know, the swamp,
love Houston,
humidity and all of that. And I thought the cold temperatures hit differently in when I lived in Colorado, and it was very disorienting to me at first how that happened. I didn't feel like it felt as cold. I felt like it was colder.
Yeah.
In Houston, you know, at 20 degrees in Houston, I thought was colder than 20 degrees when I lived in Colorado. And I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I am not on track to be that kind of doctor. I don't think you are either. But
nope, not a meteorologist.
Yeah, but that's what I felt. Do you think the opposite? You think it feels colder in California?
48 was what I woke up to this morning. That felt different to me than the 48 that I'm used to feeling. But I don't know how.
Mm.
But it does get like, when you walk in the shade over here,
yeah,
it's cold. It's freezing. It could be sunny and it's, you know, maybe 79 degrees. But as soon as you walk to that shade, it's cold again. But
it's weird,
I don't
right?
Know. It's weird. It's just, I was wondering, you know, who I could talk to about this. I feel like this happened for a reason, Jason. It's a support group, because I don't get it.
See, because in Houston, you walk into the shade, it's just a slightly different, really warm, hot temperature.
Yeah.
It's just a slightly lessened miserable. when it's hot. Yeah, I experienced the same thing. What is it? When people now talk about getting into the shade, like I kind of get it because it was an actual different temperature when I lived further north. So how
So maybe
funny.
that's the thing. The it is further than we're used to. Is LA further north than Atlanta?
I don't
I have
know.
to look at something. I can't tell
I feel
by
like the
thinking.
Google would know.
The Google probably does know.
Yeah,
Or
I usually,
the
or the AI, or
AI.
these days, just make it up and
Oh
just
yeah.
say it
You
with conviction. And then everybody will be like, oh, yeah, well, of course it is. Yeah, 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 it's
Yep,
further
just get
north.
on your put your suit on, get going, get on live
Just say it
on
enough
Instagram.
times. Right.
Stay strong. And people gonna run with it. You make a good point there. Even though it makes no sense.
Very little does these days. Well, you hit on something else too, and it's really interesting because I have discovered over the course of doing, you know, several dozen of these now, most of the people that I've interviewed I have met before. There were a couple that, you know, we met during the interview, and it was very interesting to me what their voice was like, what their personality was like, et cetera. And so, nowadays I don't think about it much because with the internet and social media, I feel like we have more access to creative people and to musicians and conductors than we used to. But how fascinating would it be to know what some of these people sounded like, talked like, you know, what was Tchaikovsky's voice like? You know, I don't know. Angry, probably.
I love Tchaikovsky.
Angry,
My
probably.
sister said something. My sister told me that the piece I'm writing right now sounds like Tchaikovsky, and I fainted. But I would love to hear what his voice sounded
Right?
like. Like, I feel like it would be nasally. Like, I'm so sick of that. It's like, oh, he'd be.
Oh, it could be. Yeah, I don't know. Some historian probably has probably done some research on it. They've reconstructed his vocal cords in the computer and they could tell you what it is. And yeah, interesting. Well, so anyway, now we have a record for future generations about what our voices sounded like. And so
Exactly.
I apologize for what my voice sounds like, but it's what I got, so it's what we're going with.
All I
And
got, man.
I try to make up for it by being pithy and funny. So
Same.
all right.
Same, same.
So Marie Douglas, talk to us a little bit about what your origin story is with music. How'd you get involved in music in the first place when you were younger?
Well, when I was a kid, I always wanted to do music some in some fashion. Especially, I wasn't sure exactly what everything was, but I knew I wanted to compose. I knew I wanted to create stuff like that. And one day, I learned from my uncle about Quincy Jones because I really liked this song growing up called "Human Nature," and I was like, so, the Michael Jackson song. Everybody knows it. Okay, what am I saying? But I asked him who makes Michael Jackson's music, like who does that? Like, does he do it? And just crazy to be able to ask that question. But he told me a little bit about it, what he knew. And he was I asked him because he was a church musician, so he would be at the church playing percussion, playing keys, and so I felt like I could talk to him because he had some insight for me. Anyway, so he told me that, and I found out a little bit about Quincy Jones from what he told me and things, and it made me something in me made, kind of click that I need to learn how to do music from a perspective where, a universal perspective, like an educated perspective. And so I could have done music in all these different ways by rote or just learning by ear and getting into community things, I'm sure, but I did not stop until I found a band room. And one day I finally got into a band in ninth grade. The rest is history. I started playing trumpet. And the cool thing about it is just all over town. I would my friends were dragging me to, they had been in band much longer, probably, at least 3 years longer. And they were dragging me to all these, community ensembles and things like that. And my band director was encouraging me to go, and so I developed like a network and like a back, a group of people that I could count on and learn from. Whereas, initially, I was playing sports, but the sports didn't have me so disciplined as the music ended up getting me anyway. So point is, it was just a it was a altering moment once I finally got in band, life altering, changed me for the better and helped me to see things from a different perspective of leadership. The things that I would get to do as far as travel, because my family moved to Atlanta when I was 3 from Buffalo, New York. But, we never went back up there. I never been anywhere. My whole family was in the South, so it was really, we were just, they were, everybody just come to Atlanta or they were in Atlanta. And so it was just tough, like to go anywhere. You never see anything. I don't know if you know about the perimeter. I know Houston probably has a perimeter on the highway,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
and that's, I never saw much outside of 285 is what, the Atlanta perimeter highway. And so it was like getting, that took me out of the perimeter, see people and things and see, oh, this is what life looks like over here and over there. And then I went to band camp at FAMU in my senior year at Florida A&M in Tallahassee. And that was a wrap. That was when it was really a wrap. It was like, oh, I'm getting out of Atlanta. This is how, here we are today.
That's great, and that's a seriously good band at Florida A&M. Like,
We love that band.
that is an absolute world-class organization. Like, what a great band for many, many, many years. That's been an outstanding band. I had a former student that went to school there, a saxophone player that played in the band, and I was so excited for him to get to play in a college group like that, because what an amazing transformative experience. And
Oh yeah.
yeah, just the sheer amount of things that you get to do as a performer, and then to be in just a super storied program. That's something I wish everybody could experience, for sure. Well, so I know you said you always knew that you wanted to write. Is there any particular thing that you remember that made you think that you wanted to go down that path?
Oh, as far as producing, yeah, there were, I'm so mad at Puff Daddy right now because he is just in all sorts of trouble. But people like him and Jay-Z and Missy Elliott and, my brother, when we were kids, we were all really into art really intensely. Like my big brother and my big sisters, my big brothers and my big sister. I had two big brothers, one big sister. They made sure that we were like looking at, like my sister made sure we sat down and watched Nutcracker every single December. My brothers made sure that we knew what the trends were, what was going on, the dances on the videos. We were learning them like choreography, so, and we would, one thing that was really cool that we used to do is just read the credits on the videos. So we knew all the video, the people that produced the videos, folks like Hype Williams and all that. And then we knew all the folks who choreographed the dance of, like, Aaliyah was my favorite singer for a while, and we knew all her stuff as far as choreography and our videos. But my brothers and sisters were really helpful in showing me what I wanted to do and what I should pay attention to. So I would read the insides of, like, CD covers and stuff like that, album covers. And I was just read what was going on, like who was arranging, who did this, who did that, who was the producer. And that's what gave me, actual destinations to try out to be one day. It just happened I played this instrument, but you know what I'm saying? But I really, really, what I really wanted was to be behind the scenes making music, creating, helping with the creative process, getting on a team, stuff like the Power Rangers. I wanted to get on like a super duper, one of them super production teams or something like that. So, it's these days consortiums are like my version of those.
Sure. Yeah. It's funny. I was trying to explain to my daughter, I have a teenage daughter, what it was like getting those CD inserts and flipping them open and reading about all the people that worked on an album and, you know, looking up the lyrics because you couldn't quite know what they were. And she just stared at me like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I just went, ah, no, those were the best, because it was like, I was the same as you. Like, I wanted to look under the hood. I wanted to know who played on the record. Like, you know, who are all the studio musicians that played on this and who mixed exactly. it and where do they record it? I thought all that was really fascinating growing up. And I don't know how I would find that now if, you know, it's not like you pull up your iTunes or whatever and they're like, oh, by the way, they recorded
they
this
put them
whole
all the
thing
way
in
at the end.
Nashville. They put it at the end.
Yeah, the end of the whole song. Like, so you pull up the lyrics on Apple Music is one way. You pull up the lyrics of the song, and when you get to the end of it, you can see. And then on, I don't know what Spotify does, but I know, what is the other one that Kanye owned? I can't think of it right now. But there's another one that Jay-Z and Kanye were into the first, they first put down, and I can't think of the name of the streaming service. It just really escapes me. I pay for it every month. But
Don't we
it's
all?
a
Yeah.
shame. But like, they have it. You can just open up on an app and go to the credits, and it's really detailed. It's so thorough. It's so cool. And you end up learning new folks, you know,
Yeah.
because everybody, you know what it is. You know, you did it too. You're obsessed like I am.
I am. And I really love that you're starting to see some films list all the musicians that played on the soundtrack now in the credits.
Exactly.
They roll them in the credits now. And that's a relatively new thing within the last couple of years. And I really love that they're doing that. And once I saw it somewhere, I went, wow, this is so strange. Why have they not done that for 40 years? They put the caterer on there. Why could
Come
I not
on.
have looked on and seen, you know, who's in the French horn section in this on this soundtrack? You know, like, that was the stuff I wanted to know. So yeah, that's really interesting. Well, do you remember, you know, like when you first kind of started going down this path, do you remember like what first project, something that you wrote, something that you created? Do you remember what that might have been?
Oh yeah. When I first started writing things out or trying to write things out, I had been in a band for like a year and some change. And my band director had to take an exit. So he wasn't working there. So we went for a little while without a band, or a few months. And we were running a band.
Oh,
You know, it was
wow.
the kids. And this is an inner city school, like it's a Southside High School, an inner city school in Atlanta, Georgia. And there's not much of anything as it is, but that the band director was the rock of that job. And so, you know, once he left, he had to make his exit. You know, thankfully it was a well-oiled machine, and we all had ambitions, and it was a safe haven for us. But so we tried to do things. We all picked up our little, you know, dream attribute as it relates to the band director's job, you know. And so we ended up, for me, I ended up trying to write this song out called Lean Back by Fat Joe and the Terror Squad, I think. And, you know, it was real cool because it had these chords at the beginning. Anyway, quarter notes, I thought it's simple enough. But then I thought, because I didn't have a finale yet. The computer at school had finale, but I'm sitting at home like, I'm trying to write this music.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, this is a year and some change into the program, into probably still can't really read music like that, but I'm trying to write out music. So that was, it was like a huge failure. And I'm surprised I didn't give up though. Like, my friend, Isaiah Bell, cool guy, trumpet player, really the best musician we had in that program. He's really good. But he ended up giving me his copy of Finale 2002. And it was a wrap after that, you know. So I started just writing every day, every day, every day. 15 minutes per arrangement, just arranging, writing songs for the band. Oop, done. Thought of it. We'll have to go write it. And yeah. I know as far as composing, though, in 2007. I think this is 2007 when Spider-Man 3 came out. And I was obsessed with it. score, all of those Spider-Man scores from Tobey Maguire, who
Yeah.
is the best one, and that's official, and I'm saying it right here. And
I
if
can get
anybody
behind
has
that.
something to disagree about that, you know, we can
Yeah.
fisticuffs.
We'll take it out back.
Yeah, let's go. Pull up your pants and take off your earrings. Put your Vaseline on. But no, I'm just playing. But yeah, that was my favorite one out of all the soundtracks that was out at the time. That and Batman. And I was just writing trying to write stuff out that sounded like that. My friend said, Marie, who's gonna play this? It was really funny. Marie, who's gonna play all this?
Yeah.
That looks too hard for us.
So was it?
So
I
yeah,
mean,
that was the first thing I wrote.
did you pass it out and lay it down like?
I just showed it to a couple of folks and got some feedback in that way. And I always did. I would always pass it out, but I would, you know, show my, like, I had somebody in like a section. Every section I would show, you know, hey, what do you think of this part? You know, and they would laugh at me and be like, hey, what's that rhythm even? You
Yeah.
know, we can't play that. So it was very educational and you know, and just this is like my formative years of really writing music out, you know, just starting to do it. But that's how I knew I was, you know, just really serious about it. 'Cause after that, I ended up just writing out arrangements, you know, Lindsey Sargent arrangements. And Lindsey Sargent's the arranger for Florida A&M. And I would just listen to him and write him out. And then one day I showed him and he just like laughed at him. But still, you know, like this kind of stuff is lets me know that I wanted to do it
Yeah.
from the earliest days of just being so terrible at it.
Oh yeah. Who amongst us doesn't have, stuff that we wish would never see the light of day that we did early on. And we've talked with several people about how it's kind of universally accepted, I suppose, that arranging is like the gateway drug into composing. And a lot of us apparently, and I didn't realize this before I started this podcast, but a lot of us kind of got into it on that trajectory. And it's very interesting how many people tell a very similar story about how they kind of got started and how fascinating, but really wonderful models to follow for sure. And how great to have, people like that to give you feedback.
Absolutely. I feel so blessed, you know, so
Yeah.
lucky. Things just
Yeah.
came together. The universe conspired,
The
you
universe abides. That's wonderful. Well, all right. Let's skip ahead. We've gotten through the let's never play these and speak of these again, pieces while we're learning. We skip over all of that. Can you what was like? Can you remember like a first piece that you wrote that you handed to somebody that where you were really like, you know what? I think this is pretty good.
As far as the composition, when I first started teaching down in South Florida after I graduated from FAMU, I had a bunch of friends who were band directors down there, and I would just send them stuff. But my husband played one piece that was called, I can't remember the name right now, but it was pretty cool, and it's actually something that is on my website. But I sat down and wrote it in like 45 minutes. Like when the inspiration strikes, it just strikes.
Yeah.
And so he played it and I heard it and I, you know, I was able to, you know, get some oral feedback, you know what I mean? Like being able to hear what was going on and maybe what I could change and maybe what makes sense for a particular grade level and stuff like that. There was another instance where I wrote a horn choir piece out, and another one of my good friends down in South Florida had his students play that, and it was actually like a transcription of a Tchaikovsky choral piece, the Crown of Roses. I just thought it was such a cool song, you know, the words and everything. It was just like, oh, Jesus, oh, you know. And so, you know, they bully Jesus. Don't bully Jesus. But anyway, so I wrote those out, and my friends have always been the people that have like take me on about composing or arranging and stuff, and play my stuff for me, let me hear it. I gotta remember the name of that piece because it wasn't what it's called now. The first piece that I was talking about that my husband played for me was called, it's called now, it's called Creative Juice, and it's an orchestra like piece. But I can't remember what it was called at first, though. It's probably called Rip Off of Strauss. I don't know. But
There are worse
but
titles. Yeah.
yeah.
I love that. Actually, that's a really good
Jot
name for a piece. I might take that. Maybe not
it down,
Strauss,
jot
maybe
it down.
somebody else. I like to rip
Rip
off
off of
Dvorak
anybody,
more than
really.
anybody, I think.
He is a good person to rip off, man.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on divorce. That's my guy.
It's another podcast.
Oh yeah.
It's when I have you. I'll have you back on for season two. We could do an all Dvorak episode. Well, all right. So let's talk about this. Can you think of up to now, what's like? Do you have like a big epic, like performance, like memory or something that's like right now, Marie Douglas, what's your career highlight concert or something that you've experienced, something eminently cool?
Well, that has to, you know, that has to be just recently the Native Band performed A Piece of Mind. And that was like, is this the mini playing? Like, it's not a note performing. It
Yeah,
was pretty awesome.
I bet that was not too bad.
Yeah, not too shabby. Like, the whole process of it was really, you know, like high. It was definitely a highlight just to, you know, be speaking and workshopping, you know, a piece with musicians of that caliber was awesome.
Is it a piece you wrote for them, or they play something of yours?
It's a piece that I wrote for Nick Williams at UGA, but
Oh, wonderful.
he was conducting that group, and he brought, you know, my piece with him, and I was like, well, I'll come over there and, you know, I'll talk to y'all. I'll
Right.
help out now. I'm gonna help. So he yeah, so that's how that happened. But you know, and it's really great. And Collins was just a sweetie pie, just really encouraging. All the musicians were just very they love the piece and the analogies, and you know, we had some laughs like we're doing now. All I do is laugh. So
Sure.
you know, it was fun to trade jokes with those folks and hang out, and you know, the whole experience of it. And of course, they sounded like, you know, gurus.
$1 million. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. That's very cool. Which piece was that?
That piece is called Soul Suite Number One, which I just finished that up back in November. And actually, since the Navy Band played it, I've edited it a little bit, and so we wouldn't have to use a writer. Like, I'm like, okay, it's too many errors.
Oh yeah.
This would be like several years long of reading for everyone. We never get to the music. So we edited it a little bit. And now we're, you know, folks are premiering it.
It's very cool.
UGA plays it next week. Yeah, next week. Next This weekend. What am I saying? Yeah, this weekend.
This
Time warp.
weekend. Okay. Yeah,
Yeah.
right. We'll do it again. All right, so anybody, if you're in Georgia, you need to go check out UGA performing Soul Suite. Number one.
Number one.
Number one. So
Yeah.
there's going to be more.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be like a bunch of like mixtapes. That was like something I obsessed over mixtapes growing up. I love mixtapes, you know. And so this is my little mixtape. And like the covers, I don't know if you've ever seen, you're from Houston, so you might know.
Yeah.
The Cash Money Records album covers from the late 90s. When they
Yep.
had like the bling out, big giant bling out letters
Right.
and strange proportionate things happening, you know, big, you know, it was really cool.
Yeah.
And it was like that look of hip hop that has this like some stuff is just completely out of proportion. I love that aspect
Right.
of the visual aspect of hip hop. But yeah, that was that's what the cover's inspired by. And like I said, it's like a mixtape and it goes through this beat switches. You probably heard of beat switches before for sure. Like hip hop has done that forever. But it's one of my favorite things, just like a through form sweep, but like a sudden change sometimes to something completely unrelated
Yeah.
might happen, So it's pretty cool piece. I
Very
gotta let you
cool.
hear it.
Very cool. I'm gonna have to look it up and check it out. It sounds awesome. And Nick Williams is fantastic.
Yeah, he's cool piece.
Not a sponsor of the show, but we'll go ahead and say that Nick is fantastic.
Yes, he has no, he didn't pay for this, we're not, but he's just that cool,
Nobody does, but we'll give Maestro Williams a shout out. A very cool dude. Well, let me ask you this. What kind of, other than we're gonna get Soul Suites, 2 through 50, what kind of other stuff that, by the way, that's a gauntlet I've thrown down now. That's the challenge. Is you gotta get to 50 now because we said it on the podcast.
Feel like Bach. Hey,
Yeah.
if I do that, I'll be a legend for real. That would just secure me for sure. So it's probably going to be one of those things that I just am challenged now to knock out. I'm a Sagittarius. Don't challenge me to
Ruh-roh. I wish I'd have known that. Okay. All right. My
anything.
bad. My bad.
Ruh-roh.
I'm a Virgo. I don't know any better, so know what I mean? Well, so what, other than that, what kind of other bucket list projects you got on the horizon? Things you want to do, things that you maybe want to try and do in the future?
Well, right now I'm finishing up a piece for Sean Murray down at UAB, and it's like 20 minutes long. So that'd be like my first kind of short symphony for band, But I do want to get like an hour long piece where it's just going and going and nothing repeats. Like nothing repeats. I don't know how often it'll change. It'll probably vary. But like that's something that I think would be like overstimulating and good for people.
Yeah.
Just interesting band things, I think in general, my bucket list of writing for band is just shock and awe as much as possible. Just give these people as much as I can give them, as it relates to things they've never heard of, or, like mixtapes for women. But if I were to like ever, I do want to score films. Like my ultimate goal is to be like Quincy Jones, but the girl, And so as much as I can do, getting into, music production, and film score and just rounding out my career, beyond writing for, band groups, I would definitely want to do everything else too.
That's
Just like
awesome.
Quincy.
That's awesome. I love that. It's all possible.
Especially
It's all possible.
nowadays.
I have no, yeah. The
Because you're
media,
doing a podcast,
sure. I mean, I'm doing this one and I'm doing another one. And yeah. Well,
And 50 years
Stephen's.
ago, you would have had to go through a lot to do this. Like,
Yeah. Now I can practically do it in my house. And
practically.
yeah, practically, yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. I think even 20 years ago, it would have been very, very difficult to do my other podcast. The production capabilities that we have because of technology is really insane. And a lot of that is good. Some of it is bad.
True.
And
True.
you probably, I mean, you know what I mean. But I mean, I just sent off a piece this morning that's going to get recorded in South Africa in a couple of weeks, and I just go, I'm gonna get up in the middle of the night and sit in my office and watch the recording session on my computer, and like, we could not have done that 20 years ago. That those possibilities were
Exactly.
not there.
What's the thing? They used to have a closed circuit television or something. I don't know.
Oh, listen, I'm telling you, the 90s
Like,
were janky with technology. Yeah, it's crazy. But also I feel like there's been a greater embrace of I want to say this the right way, you kind of multi-specialist creative people. Whereas I think a lot of folks expected, like when I was growing up, like, oh, you're going to be a composer. And that was it. You just write music, you send it off to people, they play it. You don't do any of the rest of the stuff. You don't do the producing and you don't do the mixing and you don't go and record and you don't, mock up all this stuff in your laboratory at home. Because what you do is you write sheet music and you hand it off to a live person and they go play it in a concert and you go and wave. And that's it. That's all you do. Because somebody else does this other part. And I think now
Exactly.
you find more and more people, also you're going to be a concert composer and you're going to be a film composer and you're going to be somebody that writes songs and you're going to be this person, you're going to write for jazz. And I think now there's been a shift, I feel like, where it's much more, I don't know if the word is acceptable, that you are just going to have multiple things that you're involved with and it's not strange anymore. That I feel like when I was growing up, it was almost like, well, you got to decide, what do you want to do? Do you want to go down this pathway? You want to go down this pathway because you choose, and then they never cross again. And so I think especially for your generation of composers, for the generations that'll come, over the next couple of decades, I think that you're going to find more and more people that have a much greater diversified portfolio to match their areas of interest, because I think a lot of barriers to being a creative are starting to disappear or get
Exactly.
lifted or at least become easier to push through. And I think that in a lot of ways that's really great. I have enjoyed, hearing a lot of people's work that I don't think they wouldn't have been able to do 20 years ago, and I wouldn't have been able to find 20 years ago if they had done it. At this point, I don't think anything is impossible. And you know what? If nobody wants to hire you to write music for your film, just go make your own film.
Exactly. Like,
And
it's just so many things.
yeah, it became pretty
Yeah, it's so
obvious when I
true.
got to 35, Steven Spielberg was not going to call me to score any film. So if I wanted to write some sci-fi music, I had to figure out a way to do it all on my own. And so,
Is that a Patriots hoodie?
yeah, I'm sorry. I know you're from Atlanta. I won't say anything, but you know what? I read a thing. My main squeeze Belichick was just in Atlanta interviewing.
Listen,
He's
I
gonna
don't want that man coaching my team, man.
he's gonna
I'm
he'll
mad.
listen. He
If
will
he does,
bring
he needs to do it for free.
all the Super Bowl rings, not just the one. Not just the one.
Not the one he stole
I just don't
with
know how
this
you don't run the
inflated
ball.
ball.
All you gotta do is run the ball. I'm just saying, Dan Quinn, all you got to do is run the ball.
Was the worst day of my life. I mean, I was sitting at my computer desk, my little studio, like I am right now. It's like my first little studio setup. And I was doing some work. And I turned around for a few seconds. And my life had changed from me being one of the happiest people on the planet to being the maddest person that anybody ever met.
Yeah.
Man, I'm still
Yeah.
not over it. But, I was going to give you my condolences for his retiring and also for his, falling off this year. But
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know if we want him. I don't know if I want him. I'm not gonna speak for everybody in Atlanta because I tend to be pretty, open-minded. But about this, I'm completely closed-minded.
I think he's a
I don't want.
pretty brilliant X's and O's person. And I
He
think as
is.
long
He's a
as he has the
genius.
right other people around him to do the other things that job involves, then I think it can be really successful. I think he got in trouble in New England because a lot of those people that were his real support group that helped him do the things he was bad at, a lot of them went elsewhere to do other things. And I think
That's what happens when you do it.
I think that's where he got into trouble. So I think it depends. But he's got a brilliant football mind. There's no question that. The press conferences are intolerable to watch.
Doesn't say a
So
word.
he says no, he can say two words and make it sound like one. I mean, you just don't get anything out of Bill Belichick in a press conference. And it was very strange because some of the podcasts I listened to, the Patriots press folks, they're kind of excited now. Maybe they're going to have a head coach that will talk. They're not sure. They're not sure how to deal with that. For years, it's just been show up to the press conference, ask a couple of questions, get dismissed, go write a story. What's mm-hmm. what's it gonna be like if they actually, have a conversational head coach? I don't know. Anyway, sidebar, football sidebar. I'm sorry about that. A lot. I'm sorry. I'm from Houston. I'm sorry about the Atlanta Braves. I feel like we beat them at some time. I don't remember when.
Yeah, I think y'all probably knocked us out of the playoffs this year. So no, that was the Phillies. That was crazy. I don't want to talk about that anymore. Music.
I had to watch Chipper Jones beat the Astros for all those years. Who didn't love Greg. Chipper Jones? I mean, I didn't love him when he came up to bat. The rest of the time, I could appreciate Chipper Jones.
Chipper Jones, that was my
guy. Yeah, I never liked seeing him. The Astros always had to play the Cubs. I never liked seeing Sammy Sosa. Like, please don't hit a home run. Just please don't hit a home run. Like, little dribbler to third. Like, can we get one of those every now and then? Like, come on.
Who's the other guy? Barry Bonds back then. Mark McGwire.
Mark McGwire. Yeah, and the St. Louis Cardinals. There's another one I never liked mm-hmm. to see. St. Louis Cardinals, and it seemed like we played them every year in the playoffs. It was the Braves and the Cardinals every single year, and we'd lose, some years we'd win, and we'd never win the World Series until we started cheating, and that's really fine. It's really okay.
Dang, and then that's when y'all lost y'all guy too, like the that's y'all right? Yeah.
And of course, now I live in Dallas, and so I go to the Rangers game to see the Astros, and I get the looks. And everybody's like, "Oh gosh, the Astros fans here." And then we start to win, and they shut up, and it's fine. But
so you're not going for CJ Stroud, and you're not proud of the Texans right now.
I have over the years kept up with the Texans now and then. I did more when I lived there. See, but I'm a really big fan of D'Amico Ryans. Like, I really love D'Amico. He was a great player for the team when he was there. And I was really excited when they brought him back to be the coach, because I thought, if anybody can sort the team out, I think it's going to be him. He had such a great history in Houston. He was such a good player for the team. Like, he knows the town and the score and how fickle the fans are. And I didn't think they would be this good this quickly. But it sure helps when you hit on a good quarterback. That sure helps.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm going to watch the playoffs. I will cheer for the Texans when they are not playing the Patriots. Yeah.
So you're still going to stick with them. It's not a Belichick thing.
No, I stuck with them. Brady left, and I went, lots of people have left my team. That's my team. Like, that's, he's just another quarterback, I guess.
Tell yourself.
In fact, that's what I told myself. And somebody in my house would say something about Tom Brady, and I go, "Who?"
That's how you get over him. I know that's right, Jason.
I go, "Who is that?"
How you get over
him. I go, is that a wide receiver? I don't remember. Like, so many people come and go from the team. I just can't remember over the years. Did he play for the Patriots? I can't remember. Yeah, now he's retired. I can speak of him again. But for a while, I was like, I'm just going to not talk about number 12. So number anyway, 12. We'll see. Don't Atlanta, Bill Belichick. We'll see how it goes. I don't know.
I'd be a crazy oxymoron, but whatever. Just give me a ring.
I think it'd be crazy. Yeah. Listen, I will say this. Wherever he ends up, he's going to win another ring. I don't know.
You think?
I do. I just think he's that good.
Shucks.
Somebody
he's
else
not
got
retiring,
him.
I guess.
No, somebody else got to, I think, do the personnel. He gets a good general manager. I think he'll be fine. But
the Falcons aren't just stacked. So if he did go there, it would be great.
There's talent. Small,
and he would attract a good quarterback. But that team was just so perfect. It would have been the perfect year. Like, we would have beat y'all this year if we had a quarterback. Sorry, I sound so aggressive, but I meant to.
That's fine. I suffered through a year with no quarterback, so I got you. That's the way it goes. So, all right. Well, we've had our football sidebar. That's great. I'm sorry for everybody that had to suffer through, you know, me talking about the Patriots again.
Foosball.
Yeah, foosball.
Waterboy.
Waterboy.
Waterboy reference.
What a great movie. Also not a sponsor of the show, but I enjoy it. Okay. Let me ask you a couple of practical things. We're going to get back on track now. Let me ask you a couple of practical things. Is there some studio purchase you have made, hardware, software, something that once you got it has totally changed your life?
Oh yeah. A MacBook.
Oh, yeah.
Freaking MacBook.
MacBook. Also
Well,
not a sponsor of the show, but I would take the money.
Dang it, man, because we need to get some money.
Yeah. I have
We should
one
have
too.
talked about this, man.
I
We should have talked
switched
about
to
how we could
Mac.
get all this product.
I switched to Mac a little over a year ago. I'm never going back.
Yeah. I mean, when I first got a Mac, it was probably like 2015. And there was just so much. Well, my husband got one first, and I started using GarageBand on there. And that's like kind of when I was able to really first start messing around with digital audio workstations. I mean, I tried when I was younger. I tried downloading bootleg Fruity Loops, but I downloaded it. It didn't make sense to me when I was in like high school. But once I got into Finale pretty heavy, and just seeing that, I think it helped me to use things like other technologies. So he had a MacBook going, and we were learning how to use GarageBand, and I just started making music on there. And that's when, you know, then after that next year, I got a MacBook. And, you know, it just, what it can do though, I feel like a MacBook is just so ridiculous. Like, with how many free things are on it, and you can use those free things to make media, you
Yeah.
know, so, or to be creative in some way. And so
Yeah.
I was making like videos on there, and I was videos and putting sound to stock videos and just practicing composing to things. And it changed my life. I'll never go back. Ever,
Yeah.
ever, ever, ever.
Nope, me neither. I'm fan for life. Yeah. It goes everywhere with me
Rest in
now.
peace, Steve Jobs.
Right? Rest in peace. Well, yeah, I can get behind the MacBook for sure. And if anybody from Apple wants to call, I'll put an advertisement on the end of the show for you.
Advertisement,
no
yes, sir.
problem, no problem.
There's also these headphones. They're Audio Technica headphones, and I don't remember what exact model they are. But if you know who Chad Sirwick Hughes is. He's a composer. He's a director down at Morehouse. And he told me one day to get these headphones. And ever since I got them, it's like I can hear so much better.
Yeah.
Just some good mixing headphones.
Yeah.
Way better mixes than I ever have had.
A good set of headphones is an underappreciated studio tool. Yeah. I agree. I don't know what I have. I have something, Sennheiser or something, but they're pretty. I love them a lot. Not these. Well, all right. Let me ask you these. We're getting to the end.
Oh, okay.
Do you ever experience writer's block?
Yeah, but then I just go listen to some crazy stuff. Like I listen to Willow Smith earlier, you know, just to get some things going. My favorite artist is Future. He's a rapper, and you know, he the way that he uses rhythm to me is just like, it's wild. All these 30 seconds and bada 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 up against the polyrhythms, just oh my god. And so things, I mean, I'm just so inspired by everything, and I've had this stuff backed up in my head that I want to get out. Like, even when I was a kid, I had songs in my head that I just didn't know how to let out. So it's stuck at. I got a bunch of back, you know.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to get writer's block, but yeah, sometimes. But I'm
Oh.
always inspired. I'm always inspired.
That's good. I love that. I have it all the time. Well, our last segment is the 10 question segment. It is 10 frivolous, inconsequential questions. And as listeners have pointed out, sometimes I don't ask 10 questions, but that's what it says on the show rundown, is that it's 10 questions. So I continue to call it the 10 question segment. Sometimes it's 9, sometimes it's 11.
You've been a
Everybody's gonna have to
child.
get over it because I have. And they are silly in nature, much like myself. And so we take them all with a grain of salt. There's a couple of softballs to get us going. And then we'll get more ridiculous. Marie Douglas, do you have a favorite food?
Yes, I'm vegan, so I don't eat meat anymore. But back when I ate meat, crab legs.
Crab legs are not vegan, huh? I feel
Nope,
like they should be.
they should be. They're the thing that I will go and backslide about, I'll tell you right now. Somebody
Crab
put the
legs.
right looking, smelling plate of crab legs in front of me, ain't no telling what's gonna happen.
All right, so we know what
So if you
you're.
ever want me to like follow you, like you know how to It the Clown, the It that be in the gutter.
Leave a trail of crab legs.
He can get me with crab legs.
Oh boy. Okay. Crab legs. You know what? I love that. For me, crab legs are too much work. I don't know. I won't put the work in. That's
No.
me.
Because it's so satisfying when you get that big old chunky piece of meat. Oh my God. Stop talking about this. We gotta
All
talk about
right.
something.
All right. We go on. We move on. Do you have a favorite
Or I
place you
go get
like
them right
to
now.
you have a favorite place you like to visit or vacation?
Probably Miami. Like Miami is where my husband's from. And that's probably why I like him mostly. Being from Atlanta, I'm from a city, a landlocked city. So it's like,
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about water. And then went down there on a band trip with FAMU. It was a wrap. So I've loved Miami ever since then. I've been on a couple of cruises and stuff like that, like going to like different islands. And so I like cruising. Like I like hitting islands. I probably won't do it anymore. I haven't done it since after COVID. But, I mean, since before COVID. But
I've seen that movie
scared to at this
Titanic,
point.
so I'm not getting on a cruise ship.
I feel you, man.
No,
I feel you
thanks.
on that.
No, thanks. What's the
He
other
said,
one?
nope.
The Poseidon Adventure or whatever it is. I don't need
I
any
know
rogue waves in my life. And I watch enough science fiction movies that I've imagined every way to die in the ocean. So I'm not.
Ooh,
That's going to be a
sci-fi.
big no from me. All right. Do you have a favorite color?
Color red.
Red.
Green and red mostly. Red, but definitely green. Right now, all my outfits are green. Like, only reason I'm wearing red on this weekend is because I'm going to VGA, but
I
I've been
love
wearing
that.
green for about 2 years now. I don't know why.
I love that. Do you remember what the last thing was you Googled? No one will know. You can
No,
lie.
I don't. I wish I did. It was funny as heck, man. Me and my sister were just talking about something stupid, and I'm trying to remember it right now because it would be perfect for this show. But whatever, I can't remember it. But most the things that I Google every day are songs. Like, what's that song? Ooh, what's that song called? Ooh, and then I go type some lyrics in, and then I go listen to that song. Because I'm always thinking about like songs from when I was a kid or something like that, trying to remember some, you know, thing that I can use in some music.
Love that. Very important question. When you go to bed at night, socks on or off?
It depends on how cold it is, and if it's a, if like I just bought a new sheet set, it's perfect. I can sleep with no socks on. But the last one I had, because we were like we're over here in Cali, so it's like we don't really know how the weather is completely. So it comes to winter, and it's just this is too thin, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I had to keep my socks on, but socks off mostly.
Okay. All right. If you had any other job other than what you do right now, something non-musical, what do you think it might be?
A lawyer, period.
Lawyer.
Yeah.
I love
Watching
that.
Suits. I
Oh,
watch
Suits.
Suits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People have talked to me
So
about
I'm like,
Suits. I
oh.
haven't watched Suits yet.
Oh, you're missing out, Jason. Come on now.
Well, maybe I will check it. It's on the Netflix,
You're
right?
gonna get addicted. It's on the Netflix, the put the in front. You gotta say
Yeah,
the.
I always do because
When you say the.
that's my generation. Everything is the. It's the Google, it's the Netflix. I just lean into it. I don't,
I love
you know,
that. Thank
I
you.
don't know. I feel like I crossed 40 and I went full Ned Flanders, like just right into it, face first. And yeah, really it's just a way to embarrass my children, but whatever. That's what I do.
It's on the Netflix.
It's on the Netflix.
And
Well, you know
it's
what?
really
I'll have to
good. It's
check out
funny.
Suits.
Funny and dramatic. It's
Also,
you'll
not a
love it. It's
sponsor of the
perfect for
show,
you.
but they could
Jesus, the
be.
Netflix. Yeah. We could have
Yeah.
really got everybody on this one.
Right.
I feel it. Yeah.
We'll see. This actually leads into my next question pretty good. Do you what are you somebody that binge watches things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I binge watch things and then I just get depressed when it ends. It's like my world shatters.
Sure. So then
So it's not there anymore.
are you one of these people that if you're watching a new show, do you refuse to watch it until all the episodes are out?
I'm
Like, are you that
not
person?
wasting my time. I'm not wasting my time. And you not mess with my emotions like that. Like I can't be sitting up in purgatory, emotional purgatory for a week or whatever. How long till y'all put out another, episode? I can't.
All right, no cliffhangers
Heck no. The Recruit is a show I watched and it just finished. I just finished it finally. And it's cliffhanging like a mug right now. Like I'm just feet dangling.
You know what? I
So.
yeah, I get it. I was watching a show called The Glades, and they ended this season on a cliffhanger. Then they canceled the show.
Oh, God.
So it's like, hold on a minute. But you got to tell us what happened. Like,
Yeah,
it was
man.
one of those
There's
super
this.
like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? And it was like, oh, by the way, we're not making the show anymore. You can't do that to somebody. Like they'd already filmed everything and like wrapped the season before they found out they weren't getting renewed, or maybe they got canceled, or I don't remember. But yeah. Oh, yes. The emotions. All the emotions. I know. You know what? I get around that. I just go back to the beginning and watch it again.
Oh
And then
yeah, I will. I
it's
will
just like
watch
it
it again.
hasn't stopped at all.
I
Yeah.
will watch it again.
Yeah.
If it messes me up that bad, I will watch that job again. I'm watching before, because they were being stingy with The Crown. That's another one I watch. And they were being stingy with those at some point. And so I started it over.
Oh, yeah.
Downton Abbey, I started it over. I didn't care.
Got to fill the time, right?
Hunter vs. Hunter, I started it over. I started it over,
I love that.
all the
That's really great. Well, I'm gonna have to check out Suits, I guess, because you are one of many people that has suggested that to me, and I don't know. I've just resisted. Maybe I've got to make
anime.
mental space in my brain for another TV show to watch, but
Oh, you need mental space for that. It's gonna take you through it, but it's worth it.
okay.
It's got good form,
How many seasons is
It's
it? Like, can
like
I get through it in a weekend?
no, 9 seasons. I
Oh
don't know if you can do
gosh.
9 seasons.
9 seasons is a huge commitment.
I think it's 9 seasons or six. It might be. I got photographic memory, but
We're
sometimes
getting
numbers
into
get upside
like
down.
Grey's Anatomy territory. Like, I can't get, once we get approach a decade, I'm like, I gotta really want to watch this show to get through the whole thing. Like,
2011 to 2019, I think, whatever that is.
Golly. Okay. Well, I'm still going to think about it. All right, Marie, I don't know if that was 10 question or not. I don't care. Marie Douglas, where can people find you out there in the world if they want to find you on the socials and things?
I'm on Instagram, Marie MARIE underscore Douglas DOUGLA1S underscore music MUIC. I should change that though. I should change the way music spelled. But yeah, Marie underscore Douglas underscore music. And that's my Instagram. And then I have a website, www.marieadouglas.com. That's where I put both of those two places where I put a lot of my creative stuff up at. Yeah, there's some recordings out there on iTunes of some pieces I've done, that folks have done. Flute concertos out there if you wanted to listen to Aaron Bodner. We love Aaron.
Yeah.
Shout out to Aaron.
I listened to some of that this week. The flute concerto is very cool. It's very
Yeah,
cool.
that's out there.
I'm intimidated of
It's so
flutes. I've never written anything like that for flute. Flutes are intimidating to me.
Yeah, woodwinds in general are intimidating for me, but I'm leaning in because I really love them. I just love woodwinds. But when Aaron asked me to write that piece, I had never written a concerto, let alone a flute one.
Yeah.
So, whew,
Well, yeah,
good
you
Lord.
jump right in, right?
Oh yeah, that's Marie. Just be doing stuff and don't be knowing what the heck I'm doing.
Well,
It's fun.
I can't
Oh
tell you how
yeah.
much I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. Obviously, I'm a huge fan, and everybody else will be shortly. Go and find Marie all over the internet. Check out her music. More importantly, play her music, program her music, and have her out and feed her crab legs. And
Don't feed me crab legs. Don't it.
you'll find her in a concert hall near you and everywhere else. So, Marie, thanks for coming on the show. It's always great to chat.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All
Yes,
right.
thanks for having me, Jason.
Composer Chat is brought to you by SCM Media. Is your audience dead? Bring it back to life. And thanks to my guest this week, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to watch for next week's episode with the next composer on my list. And you can find my other podcast, Beyond the Belt, Adventures from the Outer Rim, a sci-fi drama, anywhere that podcasts are streamed. Listen free. Seasons 1 through 3 are out now. You can find me on Instagram at jasonnitch.composer. You can find me on Threads at jasonnitch.composer. You can find me on the Facebooks, if you're old like me, Jason K. Nitch. You can find me on the web at jasonnitch.com or at beyondthebeltpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.